You're listening to the Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood and Lisa Nichols.
Thanks for listening to the Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course at thekickasslife.com.
Hello, this is Les Brown, Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show. Listen, continue to listen, and you'll discover your greatness.
Better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hello. Yeah, I'm here. Of course I'm here. I'm just watching this lovely dial there. Here we go. Let's bring this down a bit, shall we, ladies and gentlemen? Well, I want to welcome you to the Kick-Ass Life Show with Mr. David Wood. Well, I don't know. You know, some days I just wake up really, really silly. And I would say today was one of those days where I was really silly, but silly after all. So, hello. Welcome to the show. You know, it's always great. I'm always so grateful that you're here. You know, I was saying to my guest this week, who is particularly particularly, say that fast, particularly. Amazing. She really is. Amazing is easier to say. And someone I kind of had this kind of immediate love for, and we met our eyes met across the room at breakfast. Anyway, I'll tell you about that later in the show. I'm sure I'll bring it up. But yeah, great guest. What have I been up to? I suppose, you know, I've just been up to the kids. Weekend with the kids out on the boat. And it was awesome. We were on the inner tube, and we have this three-man inner tube, or three-woman inner tube, or three-person inner tube. I don't know how you say it. I'm not very PC, I don't think. Anyway, we got the three-person inner tube, and the boys, and they had their buddy Michael over, they were asking me to flip them. And that's pretty hard in that kind of inner tube. I mean, you got to work hard at it. Now, I did flip them. It took me a while to figure it out. You know, so I'd go around in these big circles and make these big waves. And then as I was going back into the waves, I'd crank the speed up. And then the boat would jump through the wave. And of course, the tube would then hit the wave. And they would bounce. And it was awesome. And it was really funny because Jen's in the boat and she's like watching what's going on, especially when they tipped. And she's like, oh, she freaks out. And in a caring way, she doesn't really say anything. She's like really worried. And they sort of swim back to the boat, and you can hear them laughing their heads off and just howling. And that night when we were sitting around dinner, and I asked them what was the highlight of their day, you know, and they said, oh, the flip. The flip was the highlight of the day. And then Ben said, he says, Dad, this is the most fun I've ever had on the boat. And we've done some really wonderful trips on the boat and had some whole days out there. And so yeah, that's all you got to do. Put them in an inner tube, go really fast and crank them out of that sucker. And oh, the highlight of the day. Who knew? Something happened this weekend, which was interesting. I don't know if you know. Yeah, I suppose if you've listened to the previous podcast, you'll know that I got my pilot's license a number of years ago and came out of the cabin on the lake there and looked over and I saw this billowing black smoke. And my partner had just flown over in his plane. He's got a beautiful, beautiful old plane. It sounds like a Harley in the sky. It's just a great plane. In fact, if you go onto tout.com, I have actually a little video as he came over our heads in his plane. We were in the canoe, and he just flew right over us. And then did a barrel roll. He teaches aerobatics and I almost said aerobics. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, pilots, put on your leotards before we get in the cockpit. Let's go. Anyway, so what was interesting was saw this billowing black smoke. And of course, there's that moment. Oh, I hope he's all right. But when we took the boat into Vernon to get some gas a little bit later in the day, it actually was a plane crash. These guys had taken off and it was a twin engine. And what happens with a twin engine, one of the engines cut out. And you got to sort of, you're full throttle because you're on takeoff. And what you have to do is you have to back off the throttle. Otherwise, the one prop kind of pushes the plane into a roll. And, the next minute you're upside down coming back into the ground. And that's what happened, and these guys, they didn't make it out. But life's like that, isn't it? It reminds me of how fickle life is. It would be great to think that, life is going to be long and, you're going to be old and gray and wrinkled and not care that your boobies are sagging down to your navel or you guys, your bums are sagging down to the back of your knees. But nice to think that's a possibility. But one of the things that allowed me probably to lead the life I've led and to have such a blessed life was that I never actually thought I was going to live past 40. I always felt that I wouldn't live a long life, so I better get going. And I was giving my boys heck earlier on tonight when I was having one of my less enlightened moments with my children. Which happens from time to time. What's great though is they when I get a little wobbly or a little silly or crazy or say the things I probably shouldn't be saying that I know I shouldn't say, but I do say sometimes, that I can see in my kids is like, oh yeah, he's just frustrated. He it's not really about us right now, it's really about him. Yeah, which it was. Air conditioner was broke in their house, he still had a flood in the basement from the too much rain. I'm leaving in the morning, still that stuff that, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but, I just think about that fickleness of life. We wake up today and who knows? Who knows if it's the last day? And I've often said this to my kids joke about it because I'll often say, hey, get over here. And I give a big hug and kiss when I leave the house. I said, just in case I die in a fiery crash today. And people say, oh, you're bringing that on. Well, I've been saying it for like 30 years. But it gives some perspective to our life and our world is that one day I may be right, but we've had that moment. I often think as I'm leaving the house is to leave a clean house, not a clean house, but physically clean, but a clean energy in the home, and really take time to have those cuddles and kisses and hugs. Because I'm sure that guy, when he took off that day, he was excited and, in his twin engine plane and, within 12 minutes, life was gone, right? Passed away. I don't know what his family situation was like. I haven't read about it. But I really urge each of us to have that consciousness of really making the most out of each, squeezing the juice. I should get a t-shirt, squeezing the juice out of every moment. And that's to do that. Sometimes we have to practice forgiveness and we have to practice a lot of things, but my guest this week, though, is who I want to talk about, not dying in planes. Although we got to talk about that stuff. We got to talk about it. It's an inevitability. Life, after all, is a sexually transmitted disease that is terminal. Who am I today? What? Lisa, my guest is going to listen to this intro and say, what were you thinking? Anyway, this girl, lady, I have a love affair with in my heart. And the first time we met, we just hit it off. We became instant friends. And that doesn't happen all the time. But with her, it was exceptional. Within minutes, I felt like I'd known her my whole life. And we were just really in this deep relationship of friendship. And it's continued. And we have these long calls where we talk. And she tells me about her journeys. And she travels all over the world doing her thing, and she does a great thing. And, went from a struggling single mom living on the bad side of town in L.A. to becoming a multimillionaire, internationally renowned presenter. And people have seen her on The Secret and Larry King and Oprah, among other places. But she really has a gift. and her gift. She's known as the breakthrough specialist. She's all about results. And the reason why she's good at it is because she did it. So you have to listen in. Yes, Lisa and I, two old buddies, get it on and chat about, well, everything really, including a little extra weight. Let's check this one out. Well, I am so excited you're on this show, Lisa. You know, I was thinking back a moment ago. I was thinking back to the moment we met, and we were sitting at a breakfast table, and it seemed like we'd known each other for 30 seconds, and yet it felt like 30 years. Is that, for first of all, welcome, and is that kind of normal? Is that the effect you have on everyone through life? Is that that's what's going on for you?
First, David, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited. This time has been a long time coming and anticipated by me. So thank you so much for having me with you. It does. It happens often. But then, you know, there's an energy that exchanges between two people. So, you know, our falling into instant friendship, instant friend love affair, that was, you know, that's that speaks to who you show up as and how available you are for that to occur as well as me. And it happens often. You know, I love to celebrate the greatness in people. No matter where, you know, whoever they might be, whether they're a colleague at an industry or whether I just meet them on the street. And so I enjoy that. My mother always says she'll make friends with a tree if she stood there long enough.
Well, you know, and I love watching that with you. You know, and you and I have spent a lot of time together now, and I mean, we've sat up into the wee hours of the morning and just chatted, you know, and had these wonderful, rich. And you, I have actually stolen a word from your vocabulary, which I use much more now than I don't think I ever used it before, is delicious. So I have a new word in my, and I think everyone who's listening should think about using that sometime today. I get the word delicious out, and not around food, just around an experience.
Right. They're delicious mindsets. When people say something really good, I go, oh my God, that was delicious. Yes.
You know, I'm fascinated, you know, that you were a struggling single mom. And for those that don't know your story, and there you find yourself, you know, a few years later on Oprah Winfrey, you know, Larry King, you're like, you know, you have this global global. And I mean global because you've really penetrated a global market. And I wonder, do you ever like wake up in the morning and kind of pinch yourself and think, well, how did that happen?
Yeah, I do. I do, because I'm very connected to where I have been. I'm not stuck in any place. I don't expect anything, but I'm very grateful for the journey. So I often look at my life and I just, I've been international recently in Aruba, speaking for the government of Aruba, and it was one of those moments. I just kind of went, I'm speaking for the government of Aruba. The president of parliament has asked to have lunch with me. What happened? You know, because I remember being in Los Angeles and South Central Los Angeles, to be specific, and pregnant with my son and having to go get on government's assistance just to have my baby, and having to get government food stamps and government financial aid so that I can feed my son. And I look at that and I'm not embarrassed about it at all. I was a mom willing to do whatever, willing to move from optional to non-negotiable. I remember sitting down on the couch, David, and my son, Jelani, who's now, he'll soon be 18, but he was 8 months at the time, and I needed to change his pamper. And I don't know if you've ever had those moments, David, when enough is enough. You just kind of go, okay, I'm bankrupt. I am bankrupt in this mentality. I'm bankrupt in this experience, which means it's done, over, new start. And I think those moments come wrapped, those gifts come wrapped in sandpaper. It's a difficult moment that doesn't feel good, and it requires you to go someplace you've never gone before, in you, to pull up something you've never pulled up before from you, so you can go to a place you've never gone before. And my moment was sitting on the couch, and at this time I lived in Inglewood, California, and I remember going to change my son's pamper, and I didn't have any Pampers. And I said, okay, well, I'll go and I'll get some Pampers. And I went to the ATM, and you have to have $20 in to get $20 out. And I had like $11.53, something like that. And I didn't have any money. And I was too prideful. I would not ask my parents for any money. That's it. This is my son. For 2 days, I had to wrap my son in a towel and replace the towels until I got paid again. And that was that moment when I said, okay, I looked at my eight-month-old son. I said, Jelani, don't you worry. Mommy will never be this broke again. And that started the trajectory. That started the no matter what mindset. That started the becoming non-negotiable. And I fast forward to now, and I have an international brand. I'm, you know, 6 bestsellers, and working with the government and different countries, and sitting with Oprah and having lunch with kings and queens. I sometimes go, wow, I remember the moment. Everyone knows me from this day, this current day, but I've been in this journey with me the whole time. And there are times when I'm overwhelmed with gratitude. And then other times that I'm clear on how I got here. I put my elbows up and my chin down, and I was willing to say the thing I didn't want to say and do the thing I didn't want to do so that I could become the woman I knew myself to be. I was willing to step way out of my comfort zone and create a life that was barely recognizable, which is the life I live today.
Let me ask you a question on that, because I love that saying, by the way, a gift wrapped in sandpaper, because we all understand what those gifts are, and it's such a wonderful descriptor for me, and I that's another thing I'm going to steal. I'm stealing it right now as we're talking.
You can have it. You can't steal a gift. It's yours.
But I want to go back, though. You know, the bridge from that moment when you're standing outside the ATM, it's $11, you know, what so many cents in there. And then you said, you know, you put your elbows up and your chin down. So there was that spirit, because you have your son and Jelani. What happened? Obviously, you don't just step out into a global brand. You don't just step out into the world and say, hey, you know, and I know that you demand $60,000 for a speaking engagement, and people pay it willingly. And, you know, I mean, you went from a single mom to a multimillionaire entrepreneur. But what happened? I mean, how did you get there? What was some of the early things? What were some of the early things that you tripped over and fell down?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. No, it was not. You know, people say that when they saw The Secret, they're like, you're an overnight success. I said, well, honey, if I was an overnight success, it was by far the longest night of my life. So there was a journey. First of all, I had to find my passion. I had to stop living just to live, and I had to live to enjoy my life, to live the life I love and love the life I live. I had to first recognize, David, that was my birthright. It was my birthright, regardless of the color of my skin, regardless of my gender, regardless of my economic, my religious background, all those things that I could use as a reason why not, that all of that negates any form of doubt that I might have had about my birthright. So first I had to move my mental zip code. That was number one. That physically I might have lived in Los Angeles or Inglewood, and it was, you know, just kind of reckoned with poverty and limitations and lack and scarcity. But I had to move my mental zip code to a whole nother place of possibility. And I say that, and I really, really want you to get that, because most people are in action. They're in radical action, but they haven't moved their mindset. They're still wondering if they're good enough. They're still wondering how can they do it. They're still wondering, you know, will it really work, or are they worthy of it? So I had to work on my worthiness first. I had to work on my regardless that I was born into a family that's abundant with love, but lack a little financial strength, that I still deserve to have an abundant and wealthy lifestyle. That was a difficult, I'm saying it to you in one sentence, but man, that was a whole lot of work. And then, you know, living in my skin as a black woman, giving myself a right to have a global appeal. And let me just say, I didn't start with giving myself a right to have a global appeal. I had to give myself a right to have a California appeal and then a United States appeal. That was so I had to listen and study and become an avid student of people. Now, this is key, David. People who didn't have my same background, we often, this has been my pattern at least, we would reach out to people who look like me or who had a similar connection to me. And I realized that if I reached out to someone who was like me, then they probably are dealing with some of the same mindsets. So I literally went to people who knew about wealth and abundance and went to people who had the results that I wanted. And I didn't care where they were from. I began to recognize humanity is available to teach me. I will learn from anyone. If you have something that I can chew on and I can digest and I can allow to grow in my body and in my lifestyle. And so I became a consummate student. I said to you before we got on this call, I said, if I am a great teacher, it's because I'm a better student. I always kept coaches. Now, there are a lot of coaches that I never met before. They coach me via their books. They coach me via their CDs. You know, I've read every single thing that Dr. King has ever printed, every single speech he's ever had, because I want to know how can you serve humanity and 40 years later you are bigger than you were when you were here. I want that kind of impact. And so for the next several years, many, many years, I just learned, and I walked toward my passion. If it felt good, I walked toward it. And I didn't have to always monetize it. For the first 3 years of my speaking career, you mentioned that I get paid $60,000 now when I speak internationally. Well, for the first 3 years, I didn't get paid a dime, and I was okay with that. I spoke in alcohol and drug recovery institutions, and I spoke in women battered shelters, not to build my brand, but because it was the right thing to do. It felt good to my soul. I was helping people believe in themselves again. I remember the first time someone paid me $50 to speak, I didn't know what to say. I said, what do I say for 50 bucks? Oh, my God. You know, I want to make sure that they get their money's worth. And then I began to look at my weakest muscle. See, most of us as creative beings or as entrepreneurs or as talent, we lean toward our strongest muscle. Well, as you can probably tell, I was born talking, I think. This was my gift. My gift is inspiring people. But I had to learn. I was born to be a speaker, but I wasn't necessarily born to be a CEO. And so I went to my weakest muscles, marketing, financial forecasting, systems, you know, operations, and I began to build those muscles. I spent many hours studying with people and being a Girl Friday. I would speak on stage, David, Monday through Friday at a conference, and on Saturday and Sunday, I would be the assistant to the attorney. I would become his Girl Friday. You talk about just eating a slice of humble pie. I would walk off stage and become his Girl Friday because I wanted to learn corporate law, corporate legal terms, because I knew I wanted to build a business. And so I was willing to, you know, people often say I was interviewed 158 times in 5 months. And the number one question was, how did you do it? And I got to say, if I put it in a summary form, I was willing to do what other people would stop that. And when people said, you know what, no, it's just getting too hard, David, I needed to save my life. I needed to save my life, and I needed to transform the life of my son. So nothing was too much for me. Nothing was a deal breaker for me. When you look at your life, look at where you stopped. Look at when it got too hard. Look at when you said, oh my God, I just can't do this anymore. At that point, that's when I buckled up, I put a double seat belt on, I ate my Wheaties, I took my vitamins, and I kept going. Sometimes with blistered fingers, blistered toes, and tears streaming down my face. It hasn't been all of a pretty journey, because I've had to release parts of my character, and I'm saying it pretty, but I had to stop some of my old behaviors of I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. No one's going to want a black woman on stage with a big old afro. I weigh too much. I have to wait till I lose 40 pounds. Those things I held on to, that was me. That was my mindset. And I remember the best way I can give you the picture, David, it's like I was walking through this door, and on the other side of this door was my fabulous, phenomenal future. And on this side of the door was everything I've always known and the person I've always been. And I get to the threshold of the doorway, and I can't go through it. I can't go through it because attached to me were all these toxic belief systems that didn't fit into my future. And I have to make the decision if I'm going to stay on this side and be in my familiar life, or if I'm going to turn around, take the straps off of me, and push away all my old thinking and be at peace with it and say, listen, mindset, I love you, and you protected me when I was in South Central. Listen, weight, I needed you as my jacket to protect me in some way. I don't know how. And listen, fighter in me, you know, resistant fighter and stubbornness, I needed you too, but at this point you are preventing me from my breathtaking future, and I have to let you go. Now, when we let go of a characteristic or a mindset, that's difficult because that's a part of us. We've had it. It's been a part of our profile. But I had to, my stubbornness, I was so stubborn and so, you know, just a fighter, because that's how I survived in L.A. I had to say, listen, in this part of the journey, I can fight, but I got to fight differently. I can have it in me, but it has to come out in such a way that embraces my future. And that unworthiness, you can't fit. I have to know that I'm worthy to go to Bulgaria, to go to Russia. I have to know that I'm worthy of a $60,000 contract. I have to know that so I don't self-sabotage. So that was a lot of quiet time work. That was a lot of being willing to let the old me die away, so that the new version of myself can be born. Not easy, but worth it.
I wanted to ask a couple of questions on the journey. What is around the color? Because, you know, as a white person, I don't believe, I only can think of one time where I felt prejudiced about the color of my skin that I felt. And that was when I was in Johannesburg, and just it was palatable. And I traveled all over the world. Obviously, you know, Martin Luther King is one of your heroes, as he is mine. And the world has shifted considerably around this conversation and around this acceptance. But obviously, it's still there. What is it like to be, in the color skin you have, and how's that transition occurred? You know, this feeling of love, but obviously there must have been times through your life where you've really been subject to feeling that the color of your skin was something that may hold you back. And you've mentioned it a couple of times as you've shared this story, but can you talk a little bit deeper on that? Because I think that especially in this world today, I mean, prejudice is something that it makes my blood curdle inside deep
right.
down.
Right.
But just chat about that and what's it like, and especially with white people who don't really understand what that feels like either.
Right. Well, I think my experience has been, at least in the most recent years, in the last 10 years, it really has shifted. I had a young woman, a student of mine, just last night, beautiful African-American woman, and she said, I would like you to explain to me, Lisa, how do I become a world-class, highly sought-after speaker as a black woman? And I said, you don't. You become a world-class, highly sought-after speaker who just happens to be a black woman. But you don't wear that. You don't become a speaker or successful as a black woman. That's not what I did. I said that one of my greatest gifts was the gift of I gave myself permission to assume I should be everywhere. I assumed I should be on stage beside Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen and Tony Robbins and Bob Proctor. I just assumed. I didn't wear that cloth of, will they accept me? I began to lean more on my contribution to the planet. And now that's in my recent years. I just began to see, listen, I have something to contribute. And then I had to really get to, because early in my career, that was a big thing for me. And as I was sharing with you earlier, David, I was speaking of early in the career. Will they accept me? Will they love me? That hasn't, I literally don't even think about that now, because I understand, listen, regardless whether you're black, you're white, you're Asian, you're Latino, you have a heartbeat that's pumping. You get scared. You get excited. You want to be inspired. You want to stay empowered. You want to feel connected. You don't want to be alone. When I finally got the human thread that we all have, then I begin to live around that human thread, which crosses geographical, religious, it crosses economics, it crosses social status, and it crosses cultural boundaries. However, what I found, and I found it more early, I don't experience it now. If I do, people are quiet enough about it that it doesn't really get to me loudly because so many people accept my message. But early in the career, I found that, the perception of me was that I was the sociably acceptable contribution to the room. Like, well, we have to have her here because she's a woman, you know, and so she's gonna speak to all the women. And I would constantly say, excuse me, my message is palatable and valuable for men as well. Or then people say, oh, yeah, we're so happy you're here because there's going to be about 5% African-Americans in the room. I said, but I guarantee you the 95% of the white people, they'll give value to. And so early on, there was this feeling of that I was only going to impact the body that looked like me, the body of people that looked like me, as well as I think the majority of the conversation was in my head. Now I know there's prejudices. I know that. I'm not naive to that at all, and I've experienced my own version. There are a couple of times where I've traveled to places, and the support team obviously didn't see the picture of who Lisa Nichols was because when I arrived, they treated me very, very poorly, saying things like, well, we can handle it from here. Lisa, when Miss Nichols comes, we'll take care of it. You just go on. That happened to me 3 times, and each time the support team hadn't looked at my photo. And when it came time for me to speak, you know, I saw all the support staff swallowing their tongue, you know, in fear, because now they realized that they had they were dishonoring just someone. And, you know, one of the things that I'm constantly saying on stage is, listen, you know, when my soul touches your soul, you know, all of a sudden this, our skin is a body bag that just holds our souls. This is just my body bag. It happens to be chocolate. You know, yours happens to be caramel. Someone else's happens to be yellow. You know, it's just our body bag holding our soul and our spirit. When someone touches you and moves you, they don't move your skin. They move your soul. They move your spirit. They ignite a fire in your belly. What I love about that fire in your belly is that we can cross cultural lines with it. And so, you know, in the last 10 years, David, I call people to their greatness, and you know me, I'm edgy. You know me, I'm your girl, I'm your friend. You know, I'll push an envelope and I'll call people. Listen, are you missing the message because you have an issue with the messenger? Don't miss your message because you don't like the messenger. You know, and I remember about 14 years ago, I was asked to speak at an event, and there were literally 3 guys there who were with the Aryan race. And I didn't know, and they didn't know that the speaker was black. And I didn't know. Someone had said the Aryan race, but I didn't click it in my head what that meant because I think I was in some form of denial. And their heads were shaved off. And I remember being in that speech. It was a very small room. It wasn't like 500 people where I can ignore them. It was more like 25 people. Which is why it became such a big thing. And at one point, I just said, you know, I don't want you to miss your message. Don't miss your message because you don't like the messenger. I said, at the end of this conversation, you don't have to like me. And at the end of this conversation, I don't have to like you. And everyone got shocked. I said, but don't miss your blessing because you shut down because of who brought it forth. And when I tell you, two of those gentlemen, 2 of the 3, studied under me for the next 5 years, immediately got out of the white Aryan race. But the same things for religious. I had a gentleman come up to me, and he said, I have a problem, Lisa. I said, what's the problem? He said, I'm atheist. I don't believe in God in any form. I said, okay. He said, but I love you, and you always refer to God. He said, I don't believe in God, but I love you. I said, okay. Just keep loving me, and you take whatever journey that you feel like you need to take. I said, he goes, you're not going to try to convert me? I said, not at all. If you're happy with where you are, then I'm happy with where you are. I said, keep loving me because I love you. He said, I know you love me. I can feel like you love me with no judgment. I said, I do. I do love you. I said, and don't stay right where you are until you feel like you've outgrown that mindset, and then move. Just don't resist it. Move when it's time to move. 5 or 6 years later, he emailed my office. And because I gave him my private email, and he said, I've since just begun to entertain the possibility that there's a higher power. And I said, congratulations, and I still love you. You know, and so I think when you make a soul connection, all of a sudden, all of those parameters and boxes that we live in, they begin to melt away if you're willing to allow them. You know, but the journey, you know, has been, no pun intended, but colorful.
Well, let me ask you another question, because, again, there's so many things I and I know I'll have you back, and because there's no way in 45 minutes I'm going to be able to ask you every question. But there's a question around this thing about self-love. You talked about, you know, the afro, this huge hair you have, which I love, is so awesome. But you talked about carrying extra weight, the color of your skin, all these different things that could have been, you know, you said, when I lose 40 pounds, I'll start, you know, but you didn't go. You went into this sort of journey of self-love. And self-acceptance. Talk about that, because obviously there's so many women. I mean, 80% of my students are women. And I see this every day, this internal conversation of self-worth. And you know it's there constantly. How are you able to bridge that one and overcome that one and start to see the beauty, see your own greatness? Because you can't see it in other people without seeing your own. But obviously you've done a remarkable job at seeing the greatness of people all over the planet, millions of people. So how did you do that first with yourself? Because that's the thing that someone listening right now may be sitting there, and that's the conversation going on right in the back of the head in this moment.
Right. So first of all, I completely concur. I had to, and without sounding self-indulgent on any level, but I so hope that you and every person listening get this, I had to learn how to fall madly in love with Lisa. Because I used to tell people, you don't have to judge me. I really got that area cornered. I'm doing enough self-judgment. There's nothing you can say about me that I haven't said louder and more often. And I realized that the way I was treating myself, I was being an example to how the rest of the world got to treat me. The way I spoke to myself, I was modeling and training the world how they get to speak to me. And I just began to get that, how could I expect, now get this, this was really deep, David. How can I expect, and I was looking at this in my relationships, my man-woman relationships, you know, because I'd say, oh, he didn't treat me right, and he didn't honor me. And then something just hit me, and, you know, reading books, and I thought, I began to understand, how can I expect someone to come in my life and treat me better than I'm treating myself, honor me, celebrate me, love me, adorn me, more than I'm loving myself, honoring myself? How could I expect him to come in and rescue my self-esteem? And that was around relationships first. And then I realized, oh, my God, this is broad-based. This is everything. But it started there. And I realized, oh, man, I got to be the first example. I said that on Oprah, and she just paused. She goes, oh, my God, that's brilliant. That I am the first example. You are the first example of how the world gets to treat you. You're training the world how to treat you. So when I realized that I was doing that, and it did not feel good, some of your greatest gifts, when I say your greatest gift will come wrapped in sandpaper, that's that thing you did not ask for, but because you have it in your life, you have to become stronger and powerful to make it through it. That's that aha that stings. That's that aha that comes with like a little ouch. You may have had some of those during this conversation. For me, one of my ouches was that I'm training the world how to treat me. So then I backed it up and said, well, how can I train them to treat me better? Because when people always ask you for things and they don't honor your private time, it's because you always say yes and you don't ask for a private time. When people expect your yes, that's because you've never honored them with the word no. Like, I realized that when I began to say no, I gave value to my yeses. I mean, you know, I love the fact that right before we went on, David, because this, us getting on the phone, has been a bit of a challenge because I've been traveling all over the world, you've been traveling all over the world, and when I said yes to this time together, yes, we can do it, you know, I love you, you're so brilliant, you're super successful, and the last thing we said as we, before we got started, what you said was, I'm so grateful that you're here, and I felt that, David, and so I realized that I wasn't valuing Lisa. And so let me tell you, my place, my safe haven to go to is the mirror. And I learned this from Jack Canfield, my very good friend. I call him my brother from another mother. And he would do mirror exercise. So I made up this mirror exercise, and I just got to share this one with you, because this one, I start doing this. I made this up after I was in a relationship where I was engaged out 5 months from my wedding date. My fiance turned abusive, And he choked me until I passed out, and other horrific things. And I was considered, I went to the doctor after I finally got him out of my life, and the doctor said that I was clinically depressed, David, clinically depressed. Now, I had just launched my speaking career. I had been speaking like 3 or 4 years. It was going really well, and I'm motivating people during the day, and at night I'm crying until my eyes are swollen shut. I'm just living this dual life that I feel like I'm a fake, I'm a fraud, but I don't know how to get out of this darkness. She prescribed me medication, and I said, I'm happy to take the medication, but can I try something first? Now, I'm not condoning that people not take their medication. I just needed to try. When she said, you're depressed, Lisa, I looked at that, and I talk about this in my book, No Matter What, because it was like a surreal moment. She said, you're depressed, and it was like everything stopped really slow. It's like she said, you are depressed. And I said, doctor, do you mean I'm sad? She says, you're very, very sad. You're really sad. And I, by being a teacher of how to get joy in your life, I start going back to, okay, well, what would I tell my students who were sad? And what I would tell my students is, you've lost sight of who you are. You've lost sight of the contribution that you bring to the world. You've lost sight of your value. You don't know who you are in this moment. We got to reintroduce you to yourself. So I got in the mirror, and I did this every single morning. Every single morning, David. I finished 3 sentences, and I gave them at least 7 different endings. The first sentence is, Lisa, I'm proud of you. Now, I could barely find an answer because my son was 3 years old at the time. I had endangered his life. I'd endangered my life. I'm publicly embarrassed now because I'm calling up this wedding. Everyone knows that something is happening. My self-esteem is in the tank. But I had to find 7 things that I was proud of. And it was just little things like, Lisa, I'm proud that you're standing here in the mirror. Lisa, I'm proud that you went to the doctor. Lisa, I'm proud that you got up this morning. Lisa, I mean, I was crawling. I was crawling. And the second sentence was the hardest one. If you choose to do this, this is the one you're going to want to stop, but this is where your breakthrough comes. I said, Lisa, I forgive you for. And, oh, David, I was barely audible. I forgive you for being so lonely that you dropped your integrity bar. I forgive you for gaining 50 pounds through your sadness. I forgive you for being so scared you couldn't tell your family you were being abused. I forgive you for not trusting your intuition anymore. I mean, I went deep. I mean, I just went crying. I mean, when I got to the forgiveness, I had to, like, sit down because it took all the energy out of my body, but I had to keep forgiving myself. And then the last sentence is, Lisa, I commit to you that. I was willing to make commitments to other people, but I'd stopped making commitments to myself, David. I did those 3 sentences every day in the mirror for 6 months straight. I turned my crawl into a walk, my walk into a run, and my run into a soar. And it did not take 6 months. For 3 years, I worked just on healing myself, loving myself enough to give myself a better conversation, loving my curves, loving my hair, loving my skin, you know, being understanding that intimacy is not a sexual romantic act between two people. That's the second level or third level of intimacy. The first and foremost level of intimacy is in to me, I see. Intimacy is in to me, I see. And when I see into me, then I'm willing to see into you or to let you see into me. That's why our relationship, David, yours and mine, is so rich. Because we can go everywhere with each other in conversation, in dialogue. We talk about our fears. We talk about our aspirations. We talk about our mistakes. Because I've come to peace with who I am as a woman. And when you realize that you will never be perfect, perfect does not exist. Excellence does. Perfect doesn't exist. But that you can learn how to perfectly manage your imperfection. What I've learned is how to perfectly manage my imperfection and to be at peace with that. And so it's a journey. And it's a journey that can only start with you. And when you start loving you at a deeper level, at a higher level, at a richer level, you will begin to model for others how they can love you. And people will be a bit disarmed because they're so used to treating you a certain way because you train them to do that. But when you retrain them, man, that's when life gets super, super duper smart.
Super
but it
duper.
Starts with you. Sorry, you
know,
I got
excited. No, it's beautiful. I got goosebumps as you were sharing that. It's beautiful. You mentioned something earlier about the 3 years. Now, my sister Melody, she lives in England, and she talks about her healing journey taking 10 years. And she's now a poet, and she goes out and she gets in front of groups and shares her gift. But she had 10 years. Can you talk a little bit about this time frame? Because I think a lot of people, you mentioned it in the opening of the call about, you know, those moments where you want to quit, those moments where you had to double harness up, you had to put your foot on the gas, where most people are going to stop. And because of this expectation, I mean, when for people, not just women, but for people to heal, for people to have that love affair with themselves, I mean, how long does it take?
The first thing I'd love to say is that you cannot Google download it. We have gotten into such a Google download society. Everything is Google downloadable. Not your transformation. Not your breathtaking future. That's old school. That's, you know, chin, you know, elbows up, chin down. You got to get in it. You have to be committed for long term. We cannot treat our life like it's a race. It is a marathon. And you have to give yourself permission to go through your journey. It's not going to be a Google. Transformation is not fast. You know, I was listening to a pastor once on television, and I loved the whole message was on transformation. And it was beautiful for me to hear as a transformational coach. I tell people I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm not an inspirational speaker. I'm a transformational coach. When I work with you, I'm looking for your breakthrough. And you got to be committed to work on this for a while because breakthroughs don't happen overnight. The aha happens. You may get the intellectual information, like I did hopefully in this call, you're getting some aha. That may happen in a moment, but you've done nothing with it. The application is where the hard work is, absolutely applying it. And so I talk about 3 years. It took 3 years to go from a crawl to a walk, from a walk to a run, and from a run to a soar. It still took another 6, 7, 8, 9 years for me to learn how, because to stand in my greatness. Because as you move forward, your life is going to get bigger, and you may start off, I'm a pitcher person, you may start off as an 8-ouncer, and there's 8 ounces is great, and you can handle your life, you can handle your journey at 8 ounces, and as you're creating success, your success requires you to move to 16 ounces. Well, if you're not working on yourself and transforming, you'll begin to self-sabotage. How many times have you had a great opportunity and the opportunity passed you by because, and you said, oh, I just wasn't ready. It wasn't the right time. And he said, well, while that may be true, what also could be true was you did not expand your personal capacity to handle the next season of what was possible for you. And so you have to shrink it so that it can fit inside your capacity. And so then you get to 24 ounces, and then life happens again. And if you're doing everything right, you're going to be required to go up to 32 ounces. And I teach my students like this because people wonder, God, I've mastered this. Now why am I nervous? Because you've mastered everything you could at 32 ounces. Now you got to go to 48 ounces. That's a constant evolution, a constant transformation. The place that you should always be is in self-development. Because when you're in self-development, your personal capacity is expanding, so your professional, your global, your worldwide impact can expand as well. You can never put 64 ounces of opportunity in a 48-ounce capacity. It just will not work. And so, you know, I love your sister saying 10 years. Yeah, it's 10 years in running. Mine hasn't stopped. I look at my life now, and the capacity that I had 5 years ago would not sustain this lifestyle. It would not have done what I just did in Aruba. It will not have done what I'm about to do in Barbados or in Russia. It will not handle what, you know, what I'm called to do forward. I have to expand my personal capacity, and that's self-work. That's being coachable. Most people study self-development. I got to tell you, there's a distinction between studying it, speaking it, reading it, and doing it. Action is the antidote for despair. Action is also the prescription for success. Your life transformation will only occur in the action. Here's a newsflash. You're just listening to my voice. While I hope that the conversation is delicious, I hope that you're excited about it, the breakthrough that can occur from this conversation will only happen when you take some form of action. What we often do, David, is that we try to do too much and we become overwhelmed. You need to make sure that you're transforming your life in bite-sized, palatable, digestible pieces, and that you're looking at four areas of your life this entire time. Never just look at one area. You're looking at your business and finances. That's one quadrant. You're looking at your relationships. That's every relationship. That's romantic, that's sibling, that's family, that's community, and that's the second quadrant. And the third quadrant is your health and wellness. Don't leave your health behind. I did that. Doesn't feel good. It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank when your body feels like it wants to stop. So your health and wellness is your third quadrant, and your fourth quadrant is your spirituality and your faith. Whatever that is for you, know that there's a place that you need to go to get centered and to release. Those four quadrants are the areas that you spend time in, and I normally break it down by quarter. And every quarter, I just set one goal, one bold, audacious goal in each one of those quadrants so that I'm constantly expanding my personal capacity. Because the chatter in your head will stop you. I call it the consultant in your head, on some days the committee in your head, and on some days the entire Verizon network that's in your head. You have to make sure you're managing them so that it doesn't manage you.
You know, you started the call, and we're coming to the end of the call. I really want to talk about, you know, this. You talked about when you were this struggling single mom going from optional to non-negotiable.
Yeah.
You know, you've written six best-selling books. Unbreakable Spirit is a beautiful book, but you've turned that into an online course. And because of the tone of the conversation in this moment, people are sitting there saying, well, yeah, okay, I've got to take action. What kind of action do I take? You know, they feel inspired by the conversation you've shared with them. They kind of see themselves in you,
right?
Because it's
right.
Just, you know, your story is every woman's story, every right. man's story. I mean,
right.
But there's this things you've learned, this investment you made. And I mean, I think of every single one of us that's part of the Transformational Leadership Council, whether it's Jack Canfield or whether it's yourself or Mike Dooley, it doesn't matter who it is, but we all have made a massive investment in our own personal transformation. We've surrounded ourselves with people that are better than us in certain areas that we can, and we're drawn towards their greatness, and it expands our own. But you do have tools that are available. You do have things that are there for someone to latch onto to say, hey, okay, here's a program. I wonder if you could share it. I don't normally do this, but I really want to do it because I think hearing it from you, it's just perfect for where we've set this conversation up to be. But this Unbreakable Spirit, this online video training that people can go into and really take it step by step, bite by bite. They don't have to. It's not something you jam into your head. There's action
right.
steps along the way. Can you talk a little bit about that and some of the work you do? So if people want to follow that and they want someone to latch onto and they feel that resonation with you, would you just chat about that for a bit?
Absolutely, and thank you for that invitation. You know, when I was sitting with Oprah, she turned to me during a commercial break and she says, you have a coach in your life, don't you? I said, I do. I said, do you? She goes, oh, I'm smart, girl. I have several. And that was such a validation for me that successful people always have someone in their space who's about 10 steps ahead of them, calling them to their greatness. I tell people that as a coach, my only desire is to call you, support you, encourage you, and direct you to your greatness. That's all. Unbreakable Spirit is an amazing book that we have that just talks about the resiliency of the human spirit, 39 different authors. The video series is off of my book, No Matter What. And the reason why I did off No Matter What is because I believe everything begins with a no matter what mindset. But how do we get a no matter what mindset? How do I move from optional to non-negotiable? How do I even know that I'm either optional or non-negotiable? I created a workshop from my book, No Matter What, and I did it in California, and I got hundreds, thousands of emails saying from my global community saying, can you bring the workshop to Bulgaria? Can you bring it to China? Can you bring it to Venezuela? And we couldn't quite, we don't have the bandwidth to do that, but I did have the insight to take the entire course and videotape it and put it online so that we can make it available to our global community. And that made it far, far, far more cost-effective too, so I'm really excited. So it's six sessions. And in these six sessions, I have the conversation, the dialogue with my coach. I'm very excited. The first time my personal coach is actually recorded something with me. And so this is the woman that's my personal and business coach, helped me to grow my business over 258% in 1 year. And we teach six sessions, and the sessions are just directed toward calling your greatness forward, getting you out of your own way, helping you push past any limiting beliefs you might have, helping to calm the consultant or the committee in your head, and giving you an action. And I'm grateful that we're able to do it. It's called No Matter What webinar, and I recommend if you do it to look at one and then do all of the self-work. The growth will happen between the videos when you do the self-work. It's not a piece of entertainment. It literally is like a workshop online. And your growth, your breakthrough will happen in the action. We've gotten probably about 3,000 emails so far saying that they literally have begun to transform their family dynamics, their business dynamics, and their personal dynamics based on doing the work. So we know that it works, and I'd be excited for anyone from this community to have a breakthrough because of it.
Yeah, Lisa, I apologize for the wrong name there, but though, no matter what, if someone wanted to get a hold of that, how do they do that? Do they go to lisanichols.com, or how do they find you?
They can do lisa-nichols.com, and when they go to Lisa, that's a Lisa-Nichols.com, and they'll see the No Matter What webinar available on our page. There'll be tons of different things that you can choose from. That's something I recommend as a good place to start chewing and to really digest. And then if you don't choose that, just give me your name and your email, because I'm always sending out nuggets of inspiration, nuggets of aha, you know. So just be in the community, whether you choose to take on that program or not. We'd love to have you in the space. I'll send you a gift called Setting Your Champion Free. And what I love is after I turn my crawl into a walk, my walk into a run, I begin to rechant this thing every day in the mirror about setting my champion free. I'm setting my champion free, and this is who I get to be right after that relationship that I told you about where I discovered those three sentences. And one of my girlfriends heard me outside the bathroom door pumping myself up in the mirror about how I'm going to set my champion free. And when I open the door, she's bawling. She's crying. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I need to say that every day. Can you record that? And so I recorded it, and I just gave it to my friends who wanted it. And then they said, put it online as a gift. And so now it's a gift online. You know, the very thing I did in the mirror for myself 14 years ago to help me set my champion free, we just recorded, and you can have that as my gift to you.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is, I don't normally have our guests talk about their products, and because, again, this is really coming from a different well. But it's really interesting that I felt compelled to ask you to do that, and I had the wrong name. See how the universe is so perfect? I would have done it for you and sent them to the wrong place with the wrong information.
I love you. Well, I think what I love about you is your commitment to service, and I love that you are so you know, you're not, you don't follow a script. You follow your heart. And you're organic, and you're authentic, and you're the real deal. And from the moment I met you, I knew, you know how you know someone, you know, the universe puts someone in your space as a thank you for who you're being. There are some people who just, their spirit screamed to me. And I feel like that's God, that's the universe saying, Lisa, I gave you this gift because I want to thank you for who you're being. And you're that person, you know, for me. You're one of my highlights when I go to TLC. As you probably can tell, I stick close to you like glue when I'm there. We do this cyclical feeding of each other's spirits and souls. And so thank you for just following your spirit of service. I think you feel like I don't sell anybody. That's never my intention. And thank God I'm at the place where I don't have to sell, but I am required to serve people. My calling in my life is to serve people, to find a way to tap into that possibility in your soul and to spark something to make you curious, to make you hungry, to let you know that your journey up until this moment is absolutely okay. Every decision you've ever made, that's absolutely okay. Who you've been up until this moment is absolutely fine. Cut the shackles of blame, shame, guilt, regret, and anger. Stop keeping score on what you should have done, what you could have done, or what you would have done, and begin to create in this moment that you are the author of your autobiography. And okay, chapter 1 through 25 is already written in ink. Quit trying to erase it. You can't. But you still have the pen in your hand, and there's 25 to 40 more chapters that's waiting to be written. I think when people feel that from a core place, from a sister friend, from a brother friend, and know that it's true, that's when we begin to get our breath again and take a deep breath again and stop being so hard on ourselves and begin to be the example of how we want the world to treat us. And then to claim our abundance, to claim our birthright, to claim our prosperity. See, you don't have to claim your prosperity. You don't have to claim your abundance, but it's your birthright to have it. You know, so don't walk around like it's not, like you don't have. You have it. You got to be willing to say that thing you don't want to say and do that thing you haven't wanted to do so you can be the woman, the man you know yourself to be. You got to be willing to completely redefine your essence and your existence. You know, that's who I am today, David. I am a culmination of a 1,001, a million decisions to redefine Lisa. I love who I am. I love that I come from Los Angeles. I love that I had to make a dime going 20 different directions. I love that. I'm not embarrassed, but I love that I was willing to redefine myself as a woman, as a mother, as a single mother, as a woman of color, as a full-figure woman, any definition you want. Every moment I'm willing to redefine myself in that package so that the world gets the best version of me today. And tomorrow, I hope to give you a better version of me. But today, it's my job to give you the best version of me. And because of that, and as a businesswoman, I've learned how to package that possibility and make it available to the world and to give them products and services that helps them get to their greatness. And on the same path, build a multi-million dollar business doing it in integrity and in service. And I think that's available to every single one of us.
Well, I think that's a wonderful way to end. You know, Lisa, I love you deeply. You know that. And it's so great. And we've had some wonderful, wonderful conversations. And I'm looking forward to our next one. And I want to thank you. You know, I started off right before the call and we spoke for those few minutes. And I said, you know, I really am so grateful for the opportunity for you to come and share your gift. But I'm more deeply grateful for the fact that you're in my life constantly. So I love you. I send my love to you.
Love
and
you
we
too.
Will see you soon.
I'm looking forward to that.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Well, we could have spoken for hours, as you could probably tell. And we will. And we did. You know, she told me afterwards, it was so funny. I turned off the recording. I wish she had said it on the recording. She said, I was so funny. She said, I'm in the presidential suite at this place that she's doing presenting. And often, you know, people like us who travel, and when people put us up, they put us in the nice rooms. Sometimes they put me in rooms with a grand piano. I mean, yeah, it's great. I love it. And anyway, she's in the presidential suite, and she said there's this cockroach. She described it as a cockroach or a great big cricket kept chasing her around the room. She said it could smell the fear in her, and she's running and running around the room while she's on the call, trying to stay out of the way of this giant thing. And the way she described it, I said, oh, Lisa, I wish you'd told us. It would have been so cool to have been inside that room with you while you were running away. Anyway, I love, and I told her this, you know, gifts wrapped in sandpaper. I'm going to use that one. Oh, yeah, those gifts that we don't know are gifts, all the things that happened to us, which seemed like crap at the time, and they're just these gifts wrapped in sandpaper, abrasive, and of course, the three steps. Trying it, you got to try it. Try it every day for the next 3 years. Start with a month, because that's how you change a habit. Cleaning your teeth, you can do it then. I'm proud that, step one, I am Lisa, or David in my case. David, I am proud that you. And number two, David, I forgive you for. And number three, David, I commit to you that. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. You know, that's all it is. So much wisdom in a lady that obviously practices this and done a great job with her own life. And I would say it's not a question of what she says, really. She could teach all kinds of great stuff. It's who I notice who she's being in every moment. You know, when I go to the same place as she does, we've partied together in Hawaii and in New Orleans. And I'm telling you, last one to leave the dance floor, and she can move it. We've had some dance lessons there. It's all us white folks trying to pretend we got rhythm with our tongues hanging out. As she's skirting up the dance floor. Just awesome. Just an awesome soul. Awesome person. Somebody, again, those, you may have to listen to this one again. You know, bring out a pen and paper and just follow the few things that she said. And, you know, get that person who's 10 steps ahead. 10 steps ahead of you, remember? That's the thing. Anyway, I want to thank you. I love you being here. See you next time. Hey, share this with some friends. Tell them about it. Let's get these numbers up again. All right, sending love to y'all. Ciao.
That was kick-ass.